This January, in a shocking executive order, the Trump administration attempted to halt the travel of people from 7 countries to the United States. The order banned entry for citizens of Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, while permanently suspending the entry of all Syrian refugees. As written in the editor's note to our April issue, this unprecedented order with its bungled implementation seemed designed to catch travelers unawares, like deer in headlights, stranding people in the in-between. And so Asymptote decided to answer this ban in our latest issue with a special feature on literature from the banned countries. Today on the Asymptote podcast, I speak with two of the contributors to our special feature, poet Lauren Camp and translator Hara Murad, and I'm Dominic Boyle. We talk about the power of the in-between to convey stories that couldn't be told any other way, to inhabit spaces that others can't, and to see what others don't. By not recognizing the in-betweenness that is the reality of so many people's identities and personal histories, Trump's executive order on immigration engaged in a flattening of identity. As Lauren Camp put it,
"You are this thing. You are not many things. You are this thing, and this thing we will not allow."
Camp's poem, "Given a Continuous Function, We Define a New Function," is in our special feature. A Jewish Iraqi American who grew up in the United States, at first, she wasn't sure if she qualified.
"I did wonder a little if you were okay with writers of first generation from the banned countries. I am connected to Iraq through my father. My father was born in Baghdad and raised there until he was 15 when he came to the U.S. His heritage in Iraq and in Baghdad goes back several generations. That was his homeland, and that was his father's homeland and his grandfather's. And they left the country in 50. I would not have termed his family's leaving as fleeing or as being refugees, but I think now that is, in fact, exactly what was going on. But he never spoke about his childhood in Iraq. And so it's been most of my lifetime not having any information but the date he arrived in the U.S. and what came after. I identify very strongly as American just because this is what I know, this country, this culture. And yet I feel like I carry like a backpack or something, like a thing that's not really a weight, not really uncomfortable, but this heritage that my father came into this country with."
Despite her father's silence on his life before coming to the U.S., it was still all around her growing up.
"I grew up with that, our culture, intersecting with my life. My grandparents lived an hour from us, and Arabic was, the language itself was around the table. The culture itself, the Arabic foods and the Jewish rituals sort of blended in my grandparents' house. And so I took that backpack. He didn't push it on me. And, I took it. I wanted it. I wanted to own that heritage. Most people don't know that there are Jewish Iraqi people. Like those two things don't typically go together, I think, in people's minds. And I feel like it's important that I go out and say, yes, they do. They go together."
Recently, the memories of her father about his life in Iraq have been surfacing in fragments.
"Despite the fact that he's been in the U.S. for 67 years now, he's only just opened up about it. And so I carry that sort of the silence that he offered his children with me. I carry that with me for all these years, and now I also carry the bits of information that he's giving me, the details that he's giving me. Like this morning, I was thinking about something he said to me in a recent conversation about how they used to sew okra pods together into necklaces that they didn't wear. And that was his memory. And I couldn't push into it and get more information. He just, you know, that was where it ended. So I don't know when they would do that, but I found the image very fascinating. And so you'll probably see it in a poem at some point because I want to hold on to these bits, so I don't necessarily know how they fit a whole."
In many ways, Camp says that poetry has allowed her to tell the story of her father while embracing the fractured way she learned about her father's past.
Poetry allows me that fractured narrative. It allows me the chance to put the fragments together or to make leaps at times that I wouldn't be able to do in a straight story where the reader needs all the information to be able to build a whole. I think the fact that I don't have all the information means I'm counting on you to put it together in the same way I've had to put it together.
Her background as a visual artist informs her image-driven approach to writing.
One thing that poems allow me, and they allow me many, many things, I should say, but one thing they allow me that visual art didn't is the ability to blend more. In this poem, Given a Continuous Function, We Define a New Function, it allowed me the chance to take many, many images and find a way to pull them together.
Let's take a listen.
Given a continuous function, we define a new function. This morning, before dawn, unsleeved to dense light, my back was a curve, the brutal, racked self. I plotted each move. I am not putting this right. My back could not bother to straighten. This has happened before. I tilted to the floor in a huge husk of time, tilted the whole risky instinct of my body. The other night, a scientist friend explained the second fundamental law of calculus, mean value and infinite difference. We were continuous at the table, eating. What if everyone of hyphenated identity pulls out their sweaters and leaves? I am paralyzed at the marrow of tragedy, our nation unable to stretch more than skin deep. I stopped wearing my Star of David years ago, even in low light. I didn't want that sweet spot on my breastbone to clasp the wrong notice. I can't rise to superior and inferior facets of the national situation. I watch videos, let the news run over me. Lying on the couch where the sun is relentless at the side of the room, I am burned by a clip of a female on a subway fixing odious phrases about deportation for a crowd of coalescing seconds at an Arab woman. The woman held steady her phone. If certain is in action, she stood up straight, raising her body to true. I could deceive myself that the flare has edged off since I swallowed a warm palm of aspirin. But in truth, I am churning, must unclutch grief. The human spine wends 33 bones. The country's spine has flamed to red. There are all sorts of fractures on Facebook. People fleshed to tightened nerve. No end to low points by police. Down again in the carpet, I stretch, breathing out hard when I rise on my elbows. I don't come up far. My acupuncturist says sluggish blood causes the mass of my problems. The vote ran deeper in the country's center. I was attached then to myself and small groups like me. I couldn't move to why heat was present at the axis. I don't know how long to press before I rise up. All of the country seems to be against all of the country. A core in sudden collapse. My Turkish friend sent an email a while ago in his vertiginous English. I hope you're doing well in health and cherishment since our last contact. Words are so temporary. I am convinced of less structure than frame, black planes against white. Consequence unfolds while we forget to bend. We are all within each other. We are the only people we can't stand anymore. Now every version of shadow streams over the couch. The robins fumble outside at the feeder and disperse to the branches. Leaves untie from the cottonwood. and drop without a plan. More people grab a sign and spray paint their hatred. Cartilage, griefs, heart. What surrounds what? Example, example, example. I am getting up. At the end waits the moonlight. Integral, round. I am putting this right.
The poem, which you can find in our special feature, came from a place of physical and political distress.
Well, as the editor said, it's about despair, and that's certainly true. I've had that feeling for months now, sort of despair and certainly disgust with my country and the policies that are being put in place. Virtually everything in the poem is true. And I was pretty much down and out with this very bad backache. There was nothing in me that felt good about writing or able to write or anything. And when I was able again to stand up and sit up and function, I was determined to write that back pain somehow into something.
To me, it seemed like in the poem, you were really trying to make a break. You're in some ways so fed up with the situation, so in grief or despair, that then you're trying to say, okay, we're defining a new function now. We're changing the method of being or seeing the world a little bit.
Yes, and that is true. And that idea that we don't have to continue on this path either, that this continuous function doesn't have to continue to go this way. We can redefine how it will go.
So while the poem is about despair, conversely, it is also...
This piece is about sort of health in all ways, emotional health, physical health, the health of communities, cultures accepting each other. For me, the poem allowed me the chance to go back and forth between everything, between science and laws, the laws of science, the laws of our bodies, the laws of culture that says, now you can do this, you can be unfair to people, you should be fair to people. You should stand up straight. Just all the different ways we are unbalanced or try to balance.
A lot of Camp's work is written in response to current events and breaking news, which brings a unique immediacy to her writing. It started when she was doing a public radio show.
The news team would come on and interrupt with the BBC news headlines and then the local news at the top of each hour, and I would hear those news stories repeated in my headphones, straight into my ears, minimum of 4 times in a morning. And some of those news stories just got by me, but many of them would sort of work at me, and a few of them would just unnerve me for long stretches of time. And so I began to write about them as a way to process, as a way to feel like I was taking some responsibility for acknowledging them, for caring about them, for understanding perspectives. And certainly now with the Trump administration, I find that I keep writing and writing and writing about what's going on.
In the hectic and oversaturated media environment, poetry offers a unique way to bring things back to the human scale and to make things comprehensible again.
One thing that I've always believed is that if you give the perspective of one individual, it's much stronger than if you tell of a whole group of people. Like if you name a group of people, because it's one human being, and that's a thing we can understand, where we can easily ignore a group of people in some way. That sounds awful, but I see it happening over and over. You lose track of the humanness of it when you're just given names of groups or numbers. You know, if you hear the word the Kurds, it's different than if you are given one specific example that shows you that culture, that shows you a father picking up his little girl, or I don't know. I feel like it's really important to bring it back down to individual relationships with self or with others. I want to identify as Arab American. I want to identify, I mean, it's easier for me to identify as Jewish because I was brought up in the Jewish faith, But I want to identify as both. I want to claim both of those loudly and clearly. And I want to say, you know, you can look at me and not know these things, perhaps, but I want to identify as this so that I again become an individual that you know that is either of these things, any of these things, and bring it back down to human scale again. My name is Lauren Camp. I am a poet and a creative writing teacher working mainly with older adults. I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
The power of the individual experience is also what attracted translator Hara Murad to the work of Omar Youssef Suleiman. Her translations of three of his poems appear in our special feature. They come from his recently published collection, Away from Damascus, which was published as a bilingual French and Arabic collection in 2016.
What we see in Omar's poetry, the uniqueness about his poetry is how he depicts the all the stages that led to his or other refugees' lives somewhere else. And you can see it's true that they all share a lot of suffering together, but also they have something unique to their own experience. And it's important to see the particularities of every experience. Omar Youssef Suleiman is a journalist, a poet, and a writer. He was born in 1987 in Syria, in a small city next to Damascus. At the very start of the Syrian uprisings, he was participating in the peaceful protest, started recording videos and sending them abroad. He was detected by the information services.
So after being warned they were looking for him, Suleiman had to flee Syria.
So he went to Jordan, and from Jordan, he got to the French embassy where he was able to obtain a political refugee status. And since then, he's been living in a Parisian suburb in France, and he's writing there. It's just when I start reading his poems, I feel very strongly the experience of the refugee. He depicts them with such a painful way, but that remains not sentimental. It just hits the reader without being too sentimental.
I think to me it's so evident in Do Not Tell Anyone, the last grouping of the four. Could you read that?
Yes, of course. As we cross the borders, fleeing from live bullets, do not tell anyone that we are alive.
Yeah, and so you have that very intertwined, the death and life of the bullets and the bodies.
Yes, exactly. Do not tell anyone. It's the most heart-wrenching for me because it also illustrates the rejection of the refugees that we are seeing every day. They're not wanted anywhere, and they're aware of it. Yeah, and you have that in the foreign land. It's the last couple lines that they are most powerful. There's nothing but the bareness of our being. They become, as he says in another poem, I am no one anymore. When you arrive as a refugee in a new country, new society, new culture, you are no one. It seems that people forget this when we see a refugee.
So clearly, you feel like this state of in-betweenness, this liminal state, affected the literature.
Yes, it does, definitely. And it's also the state of exile, because to be in exile is to be in a state of in-betweenness. And the late Palestinian poet who wrote a lot about exile, he said once, there's no exile for exile. If you think that you're going to find some refuge in language, well, you can try, but you'll always be exiled, and you remain in a state of in-betweenness. And from this perspective, literature is like the place par excellence of this state of exile, of in-betweenness, I think.
I noticed that a lot of the works in the special feature in general, including In the Foreign Land, the last of the three poems which you translated, the sea or the ocean plays an important role. Why do you think that is?
I've seen in most exile and refugee poems, sea and ocean are present. Refugees and exile, what they think about first is crossing a sea or an ocean. And in classical Arabic poetry, we call the line of poetry a sea, bahr. It's called the sea. So there's also a play.
So when he writes in the last stanza, as if we went back to the house of first love, we poured the wine of beginnings in our names and opened our hearts for the sea. Are you saying that there is sort of a double meaning there, that in Arabic, that could also be the sea of poetry?
It might very well. It might very, very well be on Omar's mind that the sea is also the sea of poetry. It's also when you open your heart for the sea, either as a poet or as a refugee, is the unknown too. The sea is the also the unknown of the traveler or the adventurer that's starting a new beginning.
Right, yeah.
And this is exactly the experience of the refugees. They're going to an unknown, a complete unknown that they have to deal with for the rest of at least I don't know how many years, but for many of them, for the rest of their lives.
As Murad said, part of what attracted her to Suleiman's work was that it showed not only the experience of the refugee after they became one, but also their life before. She said it's important not to forget that they have identities and lives that existed before they were refugees.
When we discuss the refugee or the refugee crisis, we tend to reify their status as refugees and completely forget what's going before they became refugees. It's like what happened before that led them to become refugees is more important than discussing whether we should let refugees in or not in any of the first world countries. But the essential question is, why are they refugees in the first place, and what we can do with our governments to prevent more refugees or to let these refugees go back to their home? And by reading this heart-wrenching experience through these poems that Omar wrote, in a way we see the whole process before they became refugees, and then we can see the humanity, the lives, the memories. They're not happy to be refugees, and they're not happy to go to other countries' doors. Yeah, it's important. And thank you very much for having this issue, because it's very important that people don't forget what led them to become refugees and how painful it is to leave their countries behind.
But Murad also sees the creative potential in in-betweenness, like with translation.
While translation remains the illustration to me of a state of liminality, because you always go back to the translation and it's not really a destination, right? It's always in flux, and in a way, in and by itself, translation or the translated poem is an in-betweenness to me. To live in a state of in-betweenness is sometimes an advantage, because you are in this liminal space and you can observe things from an outsider point of view, and you can see things that people who are on the inside cannot see, or they overlook because they've been engrossed in these things. It's something to take advantage of. We need to be comfortable with this in-betweenness, I think. Instead of putting them in a case, let's say Syrian hyphenated French or Syrian Arabic or Syrian refugee in France, in betweenness would be a category in which we are getting more comfortable, or at least I am getting more comfortable in, because myself, I am a person of the in betweenness. And I've been dwelling in the in-betweenness for a long time, and I think it should be something that we should be comfortable with. I am a PhD candidate in comparative literature and a Schaefer Fellow in Literary Translation at the University of California, Irvine. I'm finishing my dissertation this year about postcolonial literature in the Arab world. I was born and raised in Lebanon. I lived successively in what used to be called the Soviet Union, then in France, and then finally landed in California, where I still live. I translate from Arabic and French into English. I don't know, did I miss something?
And your name?
Oh, and my name is Ghada Murad.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard today, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And the works featured on this episode today by Lauren Camp and the translations of Omar Youssef Suleiman's poems by Ghada Murad and lots more are all online at asymptotejournal.com. I'm Dominic Boyle, and this was the Asymptote Podcast. Thank you.